It's not I. Pittsburgh Section National Council of Jewish Women. Mildred Lewick and Natalie Mandelblatt are interviewing Lillian Holstein on January 24, 1977. Lillian, what is your birth date?
March 1st, 1914.
Okay. And where were you born?
New York City.
And tell us something about your immediate family.
Immediate family now?
No, when you were a child.
I was one of three children. I had an older sister, older than me by 10 years, and an older brother, older than me by 7 years. And my mother and dad were immigrants from Russia with limited, almost no education, but with a burning desire for education for their children. And it remains a very interesting story in our family. The thing that antagonized my parents the most as we got a little older, and my sister at least, went to college. In those years, she went 3 years to high school and 1 year to Columbia University to become a dental technician. And that was the beginning, and we used to say to my dad or mother, how can you send children to college? You haven't got two nickels to rub together. That used to antagonize them. They had no answers. They just knew the children had to go to college, and they achieved that. And I think that's probably the most vivid memory of my childhood, that desire that made things happen. It was strong enough to make it happen, even the impossible.
Do you know what year they immigrated?
I know my father's citizenship papers are dated something like 1895, something like that. So I don't know the exact year, but it, of course it was way, way back.
What did your father do when he came to this country?
Many things. He had no particular trade, but my first recollection comes at the time when I was a very little girl, and there was a newsstand that we had in on the east side of New York, and it must have been somewhere around the World War II time, because my father was working at the Brooklyn Navy Yard and my mother was running the newsstand. So she spoke to the principal. I was then 4 years old, and she said, my Lily is 5 years old. Can she go to kindergarten? And so I was accepted in kindergarten, where I promptly decided after one day I was unhappy. So my mother said to the principal, could you put her, this is real delicious chutzpah, can you put her in the first grade? Which they didn't. So I was barely 5 years old and I was in the first grade. My family, not a bit concerned, because they figured I wasn't going to make it, but I did.
Oh, that's fabulous.
But you see, those years you didn't have to produce a birth certificate or anything. And if I made it, my mother's purpose, since my brother and sister were older, to get me off the street. Mm-hmm. They didn't want me in the house all day alone, and they didn't want me out in the cold. Mm-hmm. So school was the solution.
We've spoken before about some of the background on the family.
Fantastic family. My father, blessed memory, insisted that anybody with the name Solo, S-O-L-O-W, S-O-L-O-F, or two Fs, was family, because the original name was Soloveitchik. And we may be somehow related to the very famous rabbis of that name. And the reason they have the one F and the two Fs and the W was because so many of them in the family had the same first name. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I can't remember as a little girl ever having the immediate family living alone. We always had people coming over that stayed with us. And it didn't matter if you only had three rooms. There was always room to take care of someone. Mm-hmm. And my father was the one that went to the boat to meet them, and then they'd help them get a job and get them oriented to the job. And somehow part of the family drifted to Pittsburgh. I have never been able to discover who the person was originally that started to bring some of them to Pittsburgh. But eventually there was a huge branch of the family here, and the Solos are a very large family here. And then, of course, there's a very large family in New York, but there's an extended family in New York called the Children of Joseph, and they have a family organization. And I was president of the Junior League when I was a kid. They have filled two cemeteries.
What were they called?
The Children of Joseph. Mm-hmm. Now, I have a family tree that shows the descendancy from Joseph, and then it shows a descendancy from someone named... I guess it was Soloveitchik. This is where the Solos came from.
And your
and
maiden
name? My father
name?
Is down in that line, and my maiden name
is Solo.
Solo. Because...
With the W.
Yeah. But my mother was the only issue from her mother's marriage. That's why... See, there's confusion about that, and that's where we often talk at great length and people can't understand. Her mother then married a man by the name of Solo. That was my step-grandfather. He had children, and then they had children together. See, my mother's maiden name was not Solo. It was Pickus.
How do you spell?
P-I-C-K-U-S. But then her mother married a man named Solo. Now, my father and my step-grandfather were very, very distant cousins. Mm-hmm. That's what the family tree shows. Mm-hmm. That's why my mother's stepfather was Solo, and my mother married a man named Solo. Mm-hmm. This is where the confusion comes in, but they were very...
Maybe
it's very complicated.
I'd love to see it.
I think I... Yeah,
oh,
I do.
Love to see
and that's there. Only the branch... It only shows for my father... it goes to my great-great-grandfather... But it comes down from my father to me because I was the one in our family that belonged to the family club. And it was one of the distant cousins in the family club when we were kids. For a lark, drew the family tree. And I have it now, and I've passed it along to my children.
Oh, that's marvelous.
And it's very sad. I think I told you, Natalie, I now realize the mistakes we've made in the past when our parents were alive. And when our parents are alive, and I say it to you, Natalie, you must get every bit of information you can because with them goes the precious stories. I'll tell you another very beautiful memory I have that I think has added a great deal to my life, and I only realized it later. Being the youngest, I was the one that always went places with my mother. My mother leaned to orthodoxy more than my dad, and so she got permission from her great aunt, in whose home she was married here, to travel on Shabbos, because that day was free. If they had a business, that day was still her day. She did nothing. She'd take me, because I was the youngest, and we traveled to the Bronx. Two out of every three times we got lost because we had changed trains. And my mother used to say to me, I don't understand, Billy. If you can read, you know everything. Why do we get lost? And we'd go to visit my great aunt. And I would sit and listen to the stories that were being told. Now, of course, I don't remember them anymore. But they were delightful, even to a very little girl. And they were talking about their days in Russia and the family, and the illnesses, and the terrible things that, God forbid, happened if two cousins marry.
Yes.
Those kinds of
yes.
tales, intimate mm-hmm. tales about the family, they were beautiful. They're all gone now.
What part of Russia was your family from?
They were, both my mother and dad were from Minsk. My father still had family there during World War II, when the war was over, and they corresponded. My father had a sister who was married and had two children. They were all teachers. I never heard from them again after World War II. And that was the last of any family we knew there. There were probably others,
yeah.
too.
Were your grandparents living when your father and mother immigrated here?
Yes. I don't remember whether my father's parents were alive, but my mother's mother and stepfather were alive, and they were later brought to this country, and I remember that. And then they came to Pittsburgh. They came to visit with the late Erwin Solo. That was my mother's brother here, and of course there were other children here. And then when my step-grandfather passed away, My grandmother remained here living with her youngest daughter, who incidentally emigrated with them. She was the only one left, the baby of the family. But she later married a man from New Jersey. And so my grandma moved to New Jersey, where she lived for many years. She was quite elderly when she passed away.
Is it going to an early congregation there in Pittsburgh?
I remember that, wait a minute, I can tell you, they lived on, isn't there a street on the hill called Aaron Street?
Yes.
There was a
yes.
synagogue on the street, and they lived about three doors up, and that's where my step-grandfather used to go all the time. Mm-hmm. I remember visiting here. Mm-hmm. That's why I came, how I happened to come to Pittsburgh.
Really?
Visiting my grandma. Mm-hmm.
It has strong family ties.
Yeah, see, I had though, we had very remote relationships with the family here in Pittsburgh, because in those years you didn't travel mm-hmm. that much. Mm-hmm. We saw only some of them on rare occasion. Mm-hmm. But when what happened was, my mother was determined she wanted to see her mother. Mm-hmm. I was 12 at the time. That was my first visit here. Mm-hmm. And I remember coming home quite ill. I didn't do well in this climate. Mm-hmm. Pittsburgh in those years was deadly. Mm-hmm. And I always used to say, don't you ever see the stars in the sky, because it was always pure smoke. And I hated it. I didn't like it. Mm-hmm. I came back with my mother again. And then I met my husband that way. I came here to visit with my mother, visit my grandma. I was, at that time, 17. I had finished my first year of college. And one of my cousins had a party. And those were Depression years. Mm-hmm. And, of course, the kind of party you had was you invited a lot of girls and a lot of boys. That's where I met my husband. At the party.
And your first year of college.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I've always insisted that being an attorney, he wouldn't marry me until I knew what I was doing. So I met him at 17, and we didn't marry till I was 21.
Finished college.
I finished college. Well, teacher's college was 3 years then. I was mm-hmm. out as a full-fledged teacher at age 19 among the... There were 10,000 ahead of me without jobs, and so I never taught school.
Well, that was around Depression.
Oh, sure. See, in New York City, mm-hmm. you had to pass a license exam in order to teach, mm-hmm. and things were so bad they stopped giving it. In other words, there wasn't any hope even of getting a teaching job unless mm-hmm. you went out of the city, and there weren't many to be had there and out on Long Island, which is not part of New York City. It's Nassau County. Where perhaps there were some teaching jobs, neither a Jew nor a Catholic could get mm-hmm. a job. Mm-hmm. So it was hopeless. I never taught school.
When did the family move to the island? You started
the Lower East Side. Yeah. And then we moved uptown New York to around the 60s. My father had a little confectionery store mm-hmm. there. And I must have been... maybe about 7, 8 at the most, and I went to elementary school there and learned a great deal, because I was the only Jewish girl in my class. I don't know how many there were in the whole school, not many. It was an Irish Catholic neighborhood. And when I was 11, my father bought, again, a newspaper business out in Jamaica, which was then the country, really. The family was horrified. They thought we were going to disappear from the face of the earth. And we moved out to Jamaica, where I finished elementary school, mm-hmm. and then went to Jamaica High School, and then to Jamaica Teachers College. Mm-hmm. But during when I was out doing my practice teaching, they closed all the teachers' colleges in New York because of the Depression. And so the girls were all transferred to Hunter College, and that's where I finished. Those were... We didn't realize it then, but those were very bad years.
Yeah.
But I think we didn't realize it because everyone was in the same boat, mm-hmm. and you never fretted about other people having more than you.
Nobody had anything.
So, and that they were nice years. I tell my children sometimes about going to the prom on the subway. Mm-hmm. And, you know, for many years they thought it was a put-on. They didn't believe it. That's very funny, mother, is what they used to say. Mm-hmm. They never believed it. But no one had a car in New York. Mm-hmm. I used to refer to my Pittsburgh relatives, whom I didn't know very well at that point, of course, as the rich relatives. Because when I'd come here, everybody had a car. But that's characteristically, I don't know if you're both Pittsburghers, you don't realize, that's characteristically Pittsburgh. You know, this is one of the only places that has public transportation that I know of where I can talk to some of my friends who haven't, have neither been on public transportation. Some of them will say, I can't remember back to ever being on a streetcar.
I wonder why.
Well, because this city is not geared to it. Most people drive here. Mm-hmm. They did even during the Depression, mm-hmm. and certainly now. And there are some people who simply aren't mobile in this city without a car. Mm-hmm. And it always shocks people when I say I don't drive. It's the same as if I'm saying I'm not alive. They get the same reaction. They don't know how I'm managing.
Are your brother and sister still living here?
My brother passed away some time ago, rather mm-hmm. young. My sister still lives on Long Island. Mm-hmm. She has her only child there, her daughter and son-in-law, mm-hmm. and two grandchildren. Mm-hmm. And my father passed away many years ago, but my mother lived to see great-grandchildren. Mm-hmm. And it was a beautiful thing at my grandniece's wedding to have the great-grandma there, too, mm-hmm. at the wedding. It's very rare.
You've told us a little bit about your home atmosphere. Was it very religious?
It was the kind of atmosphere where my mother was very religious, and my father always said, do what Mama wants. He always wanted it to be my mother's way. He felt that Mama had to be happy, and if that's what Mama wanted. My father was a terrific smoker. I don't know how many packs of cigarettes he smoked a day, and he was not religious, but under no circumstances would he smoke a cigarette on Shabbos because of my mother, the way he felt about it. So it was, I think, a fairly religious home. Certainly it was an observant home, strictly kosher, and all the holidays and all the festivals observed. It was a home where Yontif, you could smell when you came home from school, and you knew it was, if nobody told you it was Yontif, you knew it was, you could smell it in the air. And you know, in all those years when my mother took care of the newsstand, and we were very poor, but we always had a lovely apartment in the sense that it was warm, it was nicely furnished, and we always had a piano, always, no matter what else we didn't have, we had a piano. And you see, my mother was the child of a language teacher. Now, we only know this. This was oral history. This had to be told to us. He passed away when she was 3. He was on a teaching assignment and died. I don't know how. The only picture she has of him was brought to her after she came to this country because she was so small. And Mama was always bitter because there had been great plans for her, this daughter of a teacher. And, of course, when he died so young and her mother remarried a man who was, as I understand it, a farmer, she was taught to be a dressmaker. And at age 12, she was an accomplished dressmaker. She sewed beautifully all her life, and at times when she had to, she sewed, you know, regardless of what my father did, she sewed in addition, but she was always bitter about it. Never would teach us how to sew. You don't have to know that. Mm-hmm. She's bitter about the lack of education. Very bitter.
Did your sister, do you remember as you were a child, when she was very young, work?
My sister started to work as she was finishing that third year of high school. She started to work for a dentist on Park Avenue, and then she took her 1 year at Columbia University and continued to work for Dr. Kaufman until she was married, and shortly after she was expecting her child, that's when she stopped working.
But as a child?
No.
They?
No. Uh-uh. Now, my brother, since my father most of the time was in the newspaper business, it was newspaper delivery out on Long Island, mm-hmm. and you know, that was a big route because it wasn't a developed area. My brother would often work with him. But my brother went on to college, too, and because of the Depression, there were breaks in his education, but he continued, he finished, and later on went into, he was with the liquor industry as one of their top salesmen. But as children, we didn't work. Now, I remember that since it was Depression, some of my friends began to get jobs on Saturday, and I was terrified. You know, I was a very shy, introverted, frightened child, and the thought of going to work absolutely terrorized me. And fortunately, my parents didn't, they could have used it, believe me, they didn't push me out to work. The first encounter I had with work, first of all, when they told me the day that we were assigned to our practice teaching assignments, they hadn't warned us in advance. They sent us out that day. I almost died of fright. And I came home and I said, I'm quitting school. And I was always a big girl. I lost 10 pounds in a few weeks because I was terrified, absolutely terrified. I did very well with my practice teaching, but that had nothing to do with the fact that I was terrified. And I never changed. So when I came out of college, of course there were no jobs to be had. What you did was everybody gravitated to Manhattan the day after Labor Day looking for jobs. And who needed you? Even the 5 and 10 wouldn't hire a college graduate. So somebody prevailed on somebody, and I remember I had a job. They sent me to a wholesale millinery firm, 1 West 39th Street. And that was some millinery firm because that was the height of the Depression, and they were making hats for the most exclusive hat shops in Pittsburgh, Atlantic City, and so forth, very expensive hats. And when I came in for the job, scared to death, they really didn't have anything for me.
You were 19.
I was 19 years old. And I said, can't you teach me to do what they're doing back there? So all these young women working, they were working with feathers, quills. And there's a way of pasting them so that they go on the hats. So in desperation, and I must have been very desperate because I was scared, and ordinarily I'd have backed off, is, won't you teach me that? So they said yes. And they took me back, they taught me. I had no skills in this, and I knew it after a day or two that I was going to flub it. This was not me. And fortunately, toward the end of the second day, the boss came in and said, do you have a nice handwriting? Well, I happen to have a very nice handwriting. And all my life I've been sad because I know there's no correlation between that and intelligence.
I'm glad.
Yeah, I'm glad. I have one son who's a Phi Beta Kappa and I can't read his writing. And I said yes. That took guts. You see, I had none of the security that goes with saying, yes, I am, or I'm good, or I can do it. Quite the contrary. But again, in desperation, I said yes, and they took me into the office, and that's where I stayed for the season, because it was very seasonal work. That was my first job. Wait a minute, let me back up. I did have a job. I remember once somebody took me someplace on Jamaica Avenue, got me a job for a very short period of time in a dress shop. Oh, I know, I quit. I'll tell you why. Because aside from not liking the selling, the boss, the way the thing was, if the lady came in and she asked for a size 16, you didn't have it, you show her a size 14, or you show her a size 18, and I couldn't. I didn't have what it takes to fake it. And so I think I lasted about 3 days, and I told my mother, I can't, I just can't. Mm-hmm. And but the other job was really my first job.
Did you enjoy it? Once you got
it? Yeah, yeah, except that I didn't enjoy having to fight the crowd. I had to get on at 34th Street at the subway, which was a pure madhouse rush hour. And my poor mother used to suffer so because I used to wait and let subways go by. I was waiting for the crowd to go away. And I'd come home late every night. You see, that was the only other experience I had with subways living out on the island was when they transferred me to Hunter College. Was the first time I had a ride to school. That was it was deadly. It was an hour each way. Anyway, after that, by that time, my brother was going with a very lovely young woman who was then the cashier of the Lerner shop in Jamaica, which was a very, very beautiful shop in those days. And she was considered a very valuable employee, and she was able to get me a job on Saturdays, where I worked from 9:30 in the morning till 10 at night on Saturday for $2.50.
Wow.
And I used to walk. That was a long walk from where I lived up to where the store was and back.
How did your mother feel about you working Saturdays?
She didn't mind that. See, remember, she had fallen into a pattern where she had been permitted to do certain things on Saturday, and so she accepted it. Also, in that sense, she was permissive with us. In many other areas, no, but she was in that sense. And unfortunately, I got no religious education because that was the pattern in those years, too. My brother, yes, but not me and not my sister. And so everything, I often say that I've learned more about Judaism in a very meaningful sense of involvement with Temple Sinai, and we were involved as founders, than in all the years previous. But I had a very deep sense of commitment and a very strong feeling for Judaism because that's the kind of home it was. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was par for the course. And I have been very observant in my mother's way all through the years. I had a strictly kosher home. Only when we moved here did I change, and my sons still don't understand what it is I've changed because I tend to still do things the same way. If that's the way I was raised, and that's the way I went.
You said before that your mother got permission to visit your great-aunt. From the great-aunt or from the rabbi?
From the great-aunt, because the great-aunt and her husband were considered, theirs was the home where the visiting rabbis would come to eat. It was a very, very Orthodox home. And she went to her for permission because it was the only way she could make contact with her. And she granted her the permission. We used to go there almost every Saturday, and there would always be visiting rabbis, and you could smell the chaunt all over the building when you walked in the Bronx. And this is where I literally grew up in the Jewish family, too, in addition to my own home, for all through my childhood.
What, when you were in college, were your friends the Jewish business, or were they, what school at the time?
High school I don't remember too well, except that I had my own friends in the neighborhood, Jewish friends. Mm-hmm. Although it's interesting, as from as my mother was and the kind of home we always had very close non-Jewish friends. Mm-hmm. My brother's closest boyfriend was an Italian. Mm-hmm. My closest friend and maid of honor was an Italian Catholic who came to live in my parents' home when I got married, because she got a teaching job way out on Long Island, which was closer to her home in Rockaway than her own home. Mm-hmm. And so I moved out, and she moved in and lived with my parents for 2 years and in a strictly kosher home. But, of course, she was a gal who by that time knew as much about Judaism as most Jewish people do. But we always had these links with non-Jewish friends and neighbors that were very strong and carried on through the years.
Did you have difficulty with anti-Semitism in grade school? You said it was an Irish Catholic.
Not in school, but in the neighborhood. You see, growing up there, they used to call me Dirty Jew all the time, and I never took offense because they were playing with me. I was their friend. As I got older, I realized it was a carryover from things they'd heard. Mm-hmm. It really wasn't a viciousness they were exerting. Mm-hmm. I could hear them say, and they'd say it to me, "Let's go around the corner and beat up the Jews." They never did it, but they would say it to me, which indicated that there was... There was no real deep thrust of hatred there. Mm-hmm. It was a thing, you know, how kids do things. Mm-hmm. They were doing that kind of childish thing. Mm-hmm. I knew that. Now I know there was anti-Semitism there. Mm-hmm. And yet I have to say that when times were really difficult with my parents living in that neighborhood, very often it was the Irish Catholic friends they've made right in the neighborhood near the business that were standing ready to help them.
Mm-hmm. So your parents had that same feeling, too.
Yeah.
isolated.
No.
Because of the Jewishness.
And yet, I can remember growing up saying to my mother, if she used the term shiksa, it offended me.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say, Mama, why do you say that? And she'd say, what did I say? See,